alright. Alright, alright, so here we are. Living it day by day, you are a superstar. At least that's what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. My name is David, and today I welcome former wrestling valet Jeannie Clark. Her recent book, Through the Shattered Glass, is a fascinating look back at her time spent at the top and bottom of professional wrestling. Miss Jeannie Clark, welcome to OWW Radio.
Hi, David, and thank you so much for having me.
It is my pleasure. How has 2016 been treating you so far?
I'm doing really good in 2016. I've finished my book, and I'm looking for a new house with my daughters, and we're just a really happy place right now.
The book you are referring to, of course, Through the Shattered Glass, it's a fascinating look back at your time spent in pro wrestling. Remind me when it was actually published.
It was published May the 4th, just over a month ago, and it's been on sale for about a month now, so it's been great, you know, having finally finished writing the book, which took me over a year. And it was very therapeutic writing the book, and now I can move on from that as well. But it's been a great time spending so much time writing and finally, you know, feeling that the book is completed, and I hope people really enjoy it.
I certainly enjoyed it. I think it's funny you use the word therapeutic. My next question for you was, did you find this whole process therapeutic? You did. I want to ask you, you have a fascinating story to tell, Jeannie. Why was now the right time?
Now was the right time because 18 years I was an addict, and 18 years I didn't feel too much because of it, and coming out of rehab, there was an awful lot of consequences to face. Coming home to my house and looking at the mess I'd made with my life and my children at home, and spending the time writing the book was extremely therapeutic because I could, when I was in, just to go rewind a bit here, when I was in rehab, we are encouraged to write our feelings down because we have, as addicts, you know, not coped with our feelings. And one of the reasons that I continued to use drugs was because I didn't like the way I felt. So when I came out of rehab, one of the things that we learned to do while we were in there was to write down our feelings, whether they're, you know, resentments against people or certain things that were holding us back. And so therefore, just being in the process of writing things down turned into a book. It's kind of a fluke, but, you know, I would go back and I'd be writing everything down, and I found it to be, in the end, just a great thing to do because it does help you when you write, you know, keep a journal, write your feelings down. So it was just something that tremendously helped me.
Mm-hmm. The book, again, Through the Shattered Glass, I found it very easy to read. It's a very interesting story. The book itself was well written. Jeannie, talk a little bit about the creative process, taking your notes into a book, working with your co-authors Bradley Craig and Neil Cameron.
What happened was is I continued to write down my thoughts and feelings in notes. And I got in touch with Neil. Well, Neil Cameron and I, we met, and we got a basic first draft of my thoughts and feelings. And he said, you know what, this is a really good story. And then I met with Bradley Craig, and he challenged me, which was really good because he'd say, well, I don't get why you felt that way, or I don't get, you know, how you did the things you did. And then I would talk and talk and talk on so many different phone interviews, and they were very, very good writers and a huge support to me going through this book process. And I think that the book came out extremely well. Without them, the book couldn't have happened. And I think that being honest was so important, because when they challenged me, there were certain things I'd say, I don't really want to go there because that's quite painful. And then I realized that part of the healing process was revisiting some of the painful feelings that I had from the past. And in the end, they just did a wonderful job of putting all the content of my notes and my interviews together. And I'm very, very proud of the book now.
Not only is the narrative of the book interesting, I liked how you inserted little quotes along the way. Like if you were talking about a wrestler that you worked with, you had a lot of nice quotes in there that added personality, and I thought made the book very interesting. Also, the pictures, Jeannie, are unbelievable of you with your children, you with Steve, you throughout your career working as a valet in the ring. An unbelievable trip down memory lane just looking at the pictures, isn't it?
Yeah. Neil Cameron came up with the idea of quotes because they kind of, like, many people don't remember that Chris and I started in England, and most people, mm-hmm. when they think about me, they think I came in at world class as the valet of Steve Austin, but actually I was the valet of Chris Adams in the UK when I was 19 years old, and when I contacted some of the people 35 years later, like Mark Rollerball Rocco and Marty Jones, and I said, hey, you know, do you remember about our World of Sport days when we used to travel the UK on all the events in the UK? And, you know, they would come up with quotes, and I just thought it just added really, you know, a lot of nostalgia to the book, because a lot of those guys from the UK scene, like there was, when I started, there was Tom Billington, Davey Boy Smith. We were all so young. And obviously, Tom Billington came the Dynamite Kid. And I just thought it was really cool to have, call them up and after so many years and ask them if they would contribute to the book. And I was really grateful to them that they did.
One of the difficult things about doing a book review interview like this, Jeannie, is I don't want to talk about all the stories in the book because I want people to buy the book, right? But your book, you know, your book does a great job of describing your childhood and your upbringing and how your parents' relationship really made an impact on you. So I want people to go and read that. It's a very personal account of how you grew up. Take me, though, to how you first got exposed to pro wrestling and how you met Chris Adams.
It was an accident, if you want, because one of my friends, whose father was a huge wrestling fan, actually got really ill, and I can recall me and my friend, we would go to a lot of rock concerts, like of that era, like David Bowie and Queen, and I would go to her house. Her dad was always watching wrestling, of which I didn't take a whole lot of notice of, but he would have tickets every week to go to wrestling. And one day he got ill, and she said to him, oh, you know, we've got these tickets, and let's go to the matches. And I'm like, okay, no problem. And when I went, Chris approached me that very first night that I ever was around the wrestling industry and asked me for my phone number. So it was quite by chance that I met Chris. And it changed my life, because that very first meeting I had with Chris Adams was obviously something that changed my life, because we ended up coming to the States together.
Oh, it's just unbelievable. I mean, not only, you know, to meet Chris, but next thing you know, you are performing with him, and then in very high-profile storylines. That's not for everybody, Jeannie. I mean, was there a part of you that was nervous in front of the crowd, unsure of yourself, or once you got out there, did you think, boy, this is incredible?
Yeah, I mean, when Chris and I started dating and he came up with the idea for me to be his valet, I was so intimidated by being the only girl at the time on the road. And, you know, everybody was like a big family, though, in the UK. But because I had already worked with Chris, he came back and asked me to do the world class when he trained Steve to as his student, and so that mm-hmm. I wasn't as nervous then, but when I was extremely nervous as a 19-year-old in the UK, but everybody was so supportive that it made it a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wanted to ask you, who were some of your mentors or some of your friends that kind of took you under their wing, in addition to Chris, of course, but those who really made an impact on you at a young age?
Marty Jones and Mark Rollerball Rocco always gave me advice. Percy Pringle in World Class Championship Wrestling, he always was somebody who would always say, you know, do this, do that. And, of course, Chris himself, who was extremely creative, and he came up with the whole ex-wife angle that was part of that. And he'd actually say to me, you know what, he said, we're going to bring you in as a heel, and if you could watch, there's a show on TV with Joan Collins, mm-hmm. and he'd say if you could just power dress, kind of like that, and just he'd give me a lot of ideas of what how he wanted me to be, and so I had a lot of support, to be honest, from Percy mm-hmm. and Chris. Yeah. And Kevin Von Erich as well, who mm-hmm. used to say, do this, do that. Yeah, so it was all good.
Well, your ex-wife angle with Chris was red hot. And I always think, Jeannie, that when, even though pro wrestling is a staged entertainment, when there is real feeling or real emotion or real character in the storylines, the fans pick up on it and really latch on. I remember when Randy Savage and Miss Elizabeth reunited all those years later and at WrestleMania, and people were in tears because this way as well. Your angle with Chris contained real feeling. Would you agree that was one of the reasons that people just couldn't get enough of it?
Absolutely, yeah. Whenever you put some reality into it, Chris and I, of course, we split up when we went up to Portland, but we had a daughter, so we remained really amicable. Mm-hmm. I really was the ex, and it did cause Tony some problems in the beginning until Tony and I became real good friends. But knowing that we were actually a real-life couple and I'm coming in with the new student of Chris Adams, I think gave it just that bit more edge because we could touch on some really personal things within mm-hmm. the storyline that we were all happy about backstage, but I think, you know, a lot of fans would have said, oh my God, you know, that's really his ex, and I think it did give it the edge, yeah, because you know, whenever you touch on reality, it just gives it that extra dynamic.
It's been well documented in a lot of interviews and books and movies, the difficulties of travel and the schedule of being a pro wrestler. Can you speak just for a minute or so about the exhaustion and the demands on your body doing what you did?
Well, you know, I'm not even a wrestler. I'm just a valet. And I don't know how the guys did it because mm-hmm. even as a female, who wasn't taking anywhere near the kind of bumps that the guys were taking. When we went up to WCW, I noticed there was like, you know, early flights that they maybe 6 a.m. So you'd have to get up at 4 a.m. Sometimes you wouldn't get out the arena till midnight. And so then you'd have to return your rent a car. And then it just was very, very tiring. And it was the beginning for me to actually think I really need some sleep. I'm going to have to sleep on mm-hmm. the plane because when we get on those early morning flights, it just seemed like maybe now would be a good time to sleep for 2-3 hours before we got to the town, go to the gym, get to the arena, and it was the start of me actually taking something to say, okay, I need to try and get some sleep on the plane, and I would actually start taking something to help me sleep.
Mm-hmm.
But it was pretty grueling, and I only did it for 5 months, so God knows how the guys would have felt, because as a female, I didn't do anywhere near as much as they did, and I found it pretty grueling. So they must have found it, you know, extremely hard.
Oh, no question, no question. And you talk in the book, I didn't realize you had your own business, Genies, that you started when you were in Dallas, and you did a lot of modeling, and you, of course, became a mother. And so you had a lot going on. It wasn't just, of course, being in professional wrestling. You had a lot. I want people to go read the book, Through the Shattered Glass, to read your stories about that time period of your life. It must have been, at one point, exhilarating but also exhausting to try to manage everything. And as you said, this was kind of when the drugs started to become maybe more than you could handle. Certainly the drugs were a big part of the culture back then in pro wrestling. I mean, you hear stories of Gina Hernandez. Jeannie, I found particularly heartbreaking, well written in that it conveyed the emotion that you were feeling. So when did you start to think your drug problem was overtaking you?
Mine actually happened after I got out of the industry. But there are obviously instances of with Gina that I mentioned, and just, you know, I did have my own business. I had about 10 employees, and I ended up selling that to work with Steve. But mainly my problems started when I got out of the business, when Steve and I moved back to Texas, postnatal depression and loneliness, to be honest. Using something for depression. And the next thing you know, you take more and more, and the next thing it's really got a grip on you. And you lose control, you really do. So it's not easy for you to stop taking when you've already got higher tolerance.
Well, it's fascinating because the quotes in the book of people that worked with you are very flattering. People really enjoyed your professionalism and thought you were easy to work with. And when you and Steve started to gain some traction in WCW and become a big part of that company, people on the outside would look and say, life must be perfect. But they don't understand what you're going through once you step behind the curtain. Would you agree?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it's not so glamorous. I think it was something that I look back on and say it was awesome to be part of. But behind the scenes, it's a lot more difficult than what people would imagine, because you're tired a lot. And, you know, when you do get home, you have to unpack and you have to pay your bills and you have to visit with people and then you're packing, and it's not always such a glamorous life, but it is something I look back on and say I was really glad that I could have experienced it. And when I got back into Texas, I did develop most of my worst addiction problems.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me then. So, yeah.
One of my favorite stories in the book, you talk about Hulk Hogan's arrival in WCW, and it did not help Steve Austin's career in that company, and in fact led to his transition to ECW, then on to WWE, where, you know, he changed the whole business forever. Talk a little bit about Hulk Hogan and that time period for you and Steve.
I think, when Hulk came in from I think it was WWE, if I remember rightly. He had a lot of creative control. And I think Steve was doing quite well prior to Hulk coming in. And then he was not doing so well. And I think that he just definitely found it difficult. He was quite stressed at that time. And obviously then he got fired and Paul Heyman actually picked him up for ECW, but I think if he was a bit frustrated with Terry coming into WCW, because Steve was that world champion, and then with what was going on, Steve didn't feel like he was doing too well in WCW.
I'm glad you mentioned Paul Heyman, by the way, who is, even to this day, just an unbelievable performer. His interviews and the way he can capture a crowd is just remarkable. I was really glad that you mentioned and shared some stories about him. Did you think, Jeannie, when Steve moved on to WWE, that he would rise to the top and become the star that he did?
I didn't actually, no. I mean, I remember Steve being quite frustrated, but also really, you know, excited. But he went in as the ringmaster with Ted DiBiase, as you know, and he didn't feel comfortable within. Steve actually isn't a person that actually likes somebody to talk for him. And that's how they kind of put him in there as the ringmaster. And Steve actually preferred to be a singles person without a valet or a manager, but, you know, he came up with the Stone Cold concept, and obviously things just got way better from there. But he was very, very fond of Paul Heyman, though, and I believe he still is. So, you know, I do think Paul Heyman's a genius myself, and a person that I have a lot of respect for.
Yeah, no question, no question. When Steve became a bigger and bigger star in WWE, it led to increased isolationism for you because of his travel schedule. He was gone so much, and you were not part of the show anymore. You were not his valet, as you had been in the past. But we also, in the book, talk about Brian Pillman's death and how drugs had become a major problem. Did it make you feel like you had a problem and you needed to clean up, or did that not have any impact on you?
It did, and I can remember Steve being extremely upset over Brian's death. And the thing was is that I was too far out of control, and I can relate to people like Jake, because I just recently saw his DVD documentary, and Brian, and I know that an addict who's that far involved will find it extremely difficult without any help to just say, okay, I'm going to stop now. It doesn't usually work that way, but I think I felt really bad because I knew Brian's wife, and I knew his had a newborn baby, and I just felt extremely, you know, Brian's death was something that, like Tony Adams, that made me think this is all going to go pear-shaped, but I still couldn't quit. I mean, unfortunately, I think addicts want to, if anybody wants to quit, it's the addict themselves, but normally they don't really know how to, you know, when they're that deeply involved in the drugs.
The book, again, Through the Shattered Glass. I am joined today on OWW Radio by its author, Jeannie Clark. Jeannie, a lot of people understand the dangers of recreational drugs like cocaine and heroin. Can you talk a little bit, though, about the dangers of pill addiction, which may not seem as serious to some people?
Actually, it's just as bad. You know, a lot of people get the impression just because it's something that you can get from the doctor. Many people within the treatment center, when I was in the treatment center, actually have a harder time detoxing from prescription medications like Valium and Xanax and Ambien than they do from cocaine and heroin. And sometimes the actual detox is weeks and weeks longer. And unfortunately, an addict will go out and try to source these pills because they can go to doctors and they can pay money, whether it's just mock doctors or private doctors, and they can get the pills if they want to. And I think there should be something that would limit the whether a person, because I came back to the UK and thinking, well, it's socialized medicine here, so I'm not going to be able to just get these medications. Unfortunately, it was quite easy for me to get the medications because you can go to several private doctors and you can pay them $100, whatever, and they'll give you what you want. But I would say that they're harder than the street drugs to actually detox from.
Wow. Do you feel that the WWE did enough to help you and that it does enough to help others that are facing these kinds of addictions?
I think they have definitely got a good wellness program now. I believe that they do, yeah. I'm not real familiar with it, but I definitely think that they've cracked down on what's from the 80s and 90s when it was really bad, and I think it's definitely something that they've done a lot of good with now.
Your book contains some stories of very dark days, certainly towards the end of your book, and you talk about going to rehab. How are you doing now? You sound good. You sound healthy.
Yeah, I'm doing really good. I've finished the book, I've reconnected with my daughters, and we've managed to talk about these things, and we're moving on and getting a new home, and we just want everybody to be happy now. You know, unfortunately with Steve and I, we had a lot of stuff get messed up because of different things that went on in the past, and I think I just want the girls to have their dad, and for us to just say we've made all these mistakes, including myself, of course, and let's just think about these kids who had to be the victims of our mistakes and put our heads together and get them into a good place, you know?
You talk about reconnecting with your daughters. How are your relationships with your former wrestling circles? Do you talk to anyone actually still in pro wrestling?
Yeah, I do. I still talk to quite a few people within the industry, and I've been going out doing some events, and also, just chatting to quite a lot of the people that were really nice to give me the quotes for my book, and some of the women within the industry too that is really good to have met back up with in the last year or two. So for a while there I was pretty isolated and I didn't talk to anybody at all. So that's sort of the nature of an addict again, is they do tend to keep secrets and keep themselves quite isolated. So it has been really good to reconnect with fans as well as people in the industry.
The book again, Through the Shattered Glass. I know it's available on Amazon.com. Jeannie, before we let you go, are there any other forms of social media that you use that you wanted your listeners to reach out, maybe find you on Facebook or Twitter or something like that?
Yeah, I just use Facebook and Twitter, and I hope the book is an inspiration to some people that have suffered from addiction. And obviously, I'm a person that survived it and beaten the odds, and I hope that can help people who either are an addict or have family members that are addicts, and realize that there was some chance of hope that things will get better.
Mm-hmm. What is your Twitter name?
It's just Jeannie Clark.
Okay. Well, Jeannie, it has been an absolute pleasure to have you on OWW Radio today. Thank you so much for joining the show. And also thank you for writing this book, because it will help people. People need role models that have overcome addiction. The book itself is fascinating if you love pro wrestling, but it's an even better story about someone like yourself who overcame addiction. So thank you for being here and for sharing your stories with us.
Thank you so much, David, for having me.
You bet. I look forward to talking to you soon, and best wishes to you, and I hope the book sells well for you.
Thank you, David. Take care.
Have a good day. Don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. You can email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Until next time, I am David. Thanks again to Jeannie Clark for today's interview. Check out her new book, Through the Shattered Glass, available now on Amazon. I highly recommend it. It's a very interesting book that goes behind the scenes of some of today's biggest wrestling stars. I really think you'll enjoy it. I hope you've enjoyed this program, and I'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio. All right, well that's okay.